things like you'd pack up a picnic and you'd go down to Pine Edom and you'd build a fire and roast maybe frankfurts or something and eat.
When the tape ended, you were talking about the women in your math classes, and you said they did quite well. How did they do in relationship between to the men in the class?
Well, there was never much relationship between class members anyway.
But how did the, what was your impression that the women did in relationship to the men? Did they do better or?
The ones who took math. Mm-hmm. Usually did better.
I see. Mm-hmm.
But that may be because they were highly motivated to mm-hmm. take it to begin with. And there were no women in engineering.
I see. At that time, did you ever have any contact with President Shaw?
No.
Okay. All right. Did you see John Hanna at the time, or did you only have contact with your professors?
I never saw him.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I had contact with my professors, but, you know, they were no one outstanding.
Yeah. Were there any other professors while you were an undergraduate that you can say had an important influence on you when you were here?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I thought there was a math professor, but maybe that was later when you were in MIT.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, because... now, let's see. Yeah, but that was later.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So after graduation, you taught math and English at Portland High School, not far from Lansing?
Well, the first term.
Okay.
But then... in the next fall, I taught math and physics and chemistry.
Okay. And this is just before
they shifted around, and it had a eighth grade teacher also teaching the math and physics, or the physics. So I taught math and English one term.
Mm-hmm.
And then they shifted thing around, so I taught math and chemistry and physics.
Mm-hmm. And that was in the public school?
Yes.
In Portland. Mm-hmm. You were there when you first heard of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor? Or?
I believe that was right, because let's see, that was in 1941, wasn't it?
Yes, December.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was teaching in Portland, but I'd already met my husband, who was a graduate assistant at Michigan State at that time. And there was a friend of his from the same town in New York that was up here in school at that time. And my father was still in Hubbardston, and my mother wasn't living at home at that time. So I used to bring friends up for the weekend sometimes and come to see my father. And Francis Shepherd was up with me seeing my father. And we'd gone off on this Sunday morning to look for a place that was supposed to be a beaver dam. I'm not sure we ever found it. And when we came home, about maybe 1 o'clock in the afternoon, my father was listening to the radio, and he said, "Come and hear this." And the Japanese had just attacked Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went back that afternoon to East Lansing, where I was returning him and the minister's daughter in Hubbardston also. Was working in East Lansing. And so I took them all back to East Lansing, and we sat around where she was living, and her roommate was engaged to someone who was in ROTC. And we all got sat around that evening. We picked up Bob from where he was working and talked about the changes it was going to make in our lives.
And I think that's where I come in. He wants to know how you first met Bob.
I'm not sure.
I can tell the story that Bob told me.
I'm not sure. I knew him because I can remember once I was eating over at Cupie's and he came and joined me at the table.
Yeah. And
Cupie's was a local restaurant?
It was right across from the campus and cheap.
Okay. Well, maybe he would like a little bit more of an extended idea of your courtship. So if you want to describe a little bit of that, too.
Well, that doesn't have much to do with much of anything.
Well, I thought it was interesting. Well, how did you decide to get married to Bob? And how, you can describe how that occurred.
Well, we had some mutual friends, and there was Bernie Rothlein and Virginia I'm not sure of her last name anymore, and we used to sometimes sort of double date, and they said, ask Bob if he'd ever seen Lake Michigan, and he said no, and they said, oh, you must see Lake Michigan, we must take him to see Lake Michigan. So I had a car and so we arranged we were going to drive to Lake Michigan and show Bob Lake Michigan. And it was a Memorial Day weekend, but we started up, I think the day after Memorial Day. I don't know what day of the week Memorial Day came on then. But anyway, we started up like a Saturday. We had to stay overnight up there and took him to see Lake Michigan. And then came back the next day. And it was during that trip that he asked me to marry him.
Which was sort
of a surprise. I didn't really know him that well.
And what was your answer?
I said, I'll tell you next week. So I thought about it for a week and decided it looked okay. I'd been looking for a smart husband, and he was quite smart. You could talk to him.
And what were the circumstances that around your marriage, the actual wedding, when you...
After Pearl Harbor, he could no longer get a deferment as a graduate student. But they promised him, but he was offered a job teaching radar in Boston. Nobody knew anything about radar, but apparently he'd taken an electrical engineering course once, and they went to the electrical engineering departments trying to find someone with a proper background. And they said, well, we don't have any engineering students, but there was this fellow from physics that came over here, and he did exceptionally well. So he had this promise of a deferment if he went and taught radar in Boston. So we decided it was a good time to get married so I could go with him. I gave up my job in Portland, and his parents, who live in New York, came out to go to his commencement for his master's degree. He took a master's degree instead of going on for the PhD. And then they came up to Hubbardston, and they had to stay overnight because there was no other place to stay. They stayed in our house. And we got married the next afternoon. the minister was going to come up to our house to marry us. And my aunt came, and my sister came, and we'd asked Bernie and Virginia to come. And the minister said, I'll come up, I have to go somewhere else first, but I'll come up when I get back in the afternoon. And so he got back earlier and he thought, so Bernie and Virginia got there too late for the wedding.
They missed the wedding.
And we got married in my parents' living room. And my mother had someone bake a cake, and they had a cake and ice cream afterward.
Well, the story of how they got to Boston is kind of interesting, if you want to hear it.
Of course.
Would you like to describe the story of how you got to Boston after that?
Well,
could I ask one quick question about what the year was? This 1942?
Let's see. Pearl Harbor was 41, so this was 42 years.
42. And then what day did you get married?
What day?
Yeah.
I think it was June 14th, but I'm not sure.
Okay. And he went to graduation just before that.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. 1942. Okay. So then, I'm sorry I interrupted.
You could tell them how you got to Boston and the pressures of getting there.
Well, we went up to Hubbardston to pick up some things that I wanted to take with me and say goodbye to my parents. And gas rationing had started, but it wasn't too serious in Michigan. And so we started out, and we stopped so my husband could tell someone where he was going. He had this deferment, I forget what they called it, and they'd promised him a deferment for taking this job, but they changed their minds the last minute. So he spent a day at the telegraph office, because that was before the long-distance calls were so common. And finally, they said, well, the best thing you can do is get there and start working as fast as you can, and we will continue to see what we can do about it. So we headed off and stopped at his parents' home in Upper New York, near Batavia. And we got there, and further east, the gas rationing was very strict, and we couldn't possibly get enough to get to Boston. So we unpacked everything we had, left most of it there, left the car there, and each took a suitcase and got on a bus and went overnight to Boston. So when we got to Boston, I guess maybe we had a lunch, I'm not sure, but we found a taxi driver and asked him to take us to a hotel near MIT. And he looked at us and said, you can't afford a hotel. I'll find you a nice rooming house. So he found us a nice rooming house right near the bridge over the Charles River. And we found a nice room there. And he left me and went right to work after the night on the bus to report for duty.
And as I remember, the place he went to work was an unmarked building, so it was security clearance and all, so he had to sort of walk into a strange building and find his way through it.
Yeah. No one was supposed to know what they were doing up there.
Mm-hmm. Now, was this at MIT?
I'm not sure whether that was under MIT. It was sponsored by both MIT and Harvard.
I see. Okay.
And they had both Army and Navy. And after a while, they separated the Army branch and the Navy branch.
And can you explain why?
Well, there was something about someone having to salute for... They all had to salute someone for the officer of the day, and they got in a quarrel over whether it would be an Army or a Navy officer. So they separated them.
The inter-service rivalry. Was your husband employed by the government, or was he in the military? Do you remember?
He was not in the military.
Okay.
But many of the teachers down there were. It was a mixture of the ones who were civilians and the ones who weren't. Mm-hmm. And he was not in the military. Mm-hmm. And the ones who were in the military would eventually put in a term or so, often overseas.
I see. So he was responsible for teaching how to use radar, or was he doing research on radar?
No one. For how to use it. But they didn't have even a manual to go with it half the time, and if they did, it was wrong.
Uh-huh. And the machines kept changing.
Lots of vacuum tubes, and it was hard to determine which ones was causing the trouble when they went.
Mm-hmm. So he was involved in some of the original development?
Well, he was teaching them. Mm-hmm. They weren't doing any research
there. I see.
They were doing that up at the radiation lab, the theoretical research, and also others. And so when we got to Boston, first I went to an employment agency to see if I could get some kind of job, because what he was earning was just barely enough to keep us going. He didn't want me to. He wanted me to go to school, but it wasn't really quite realistic. And they looked at my qualifications and said, "You're overqualified for any of our jobs. Go up to MIT or Harvard." So I went up to MIT, and Bob wanted me to get a graduate assistantship. He wanted me to get educated. And I went there for that. They said, "Well, we don't have any such thing. We've put together two graduate assistantships to make full-time so we can keep some of the young men out of the Army and Navy." But they said, why don't you go over to the radiation lab? Who did they tell me? Oh, Sam Gouchman. They said, "Go over and see Sam Gouchman. He's looking for some people like you." So, I was rather shy, but I went over to the radiation lab, and they hired me, just like that.
And what were your duties?
Well, we were computers. Mm-hmm. That's how I got interested in computing. What we had were at the time state of the art. There were Monroes and Marchants that were the best known of the calculating machines. And they were electrical powered. They carried 10 digits. And we had Marchants there. And they could add, subtract, multiply, and divide. But they couldn't do square roots. So you had to use them. And I was working for the theoretical group, so there was a lot of calculation to do. So we learned to do this calculation, and you kept it all. You had a big book about so wide and so high that was lined out, that you, all the things you'd put in memory in the computer now, you'd put down in writing. Mm-hmm. And you'd, it was sort of easy work, but monotonous. But the people we worked for were very nice, and they said, "You can't do all of that work 8 hours a day without taking breaks." So we were encouraged to take morning and afternoon breaks. At first, sometimes we ate lunch out, But the lunchrooms were so crowded with the wartime, and it took so much time that they began hiring a woman to come in and make soup and sandwiches that you could get there at the lab and just eat there.
Mm-hmm. How many other people were you working with in that?
At the lab?
As a computer, who else was working?
Well, it varied over the time. Sometimes I was trying to remember just how many, but the ones that were real steady workers there were, maybe five or six, and then sometimes there would be more. That was in the theoretical division. And it was an interesting place to work because there were some quite well-known people who would have computing done there.
Can you mention their names?
Well, the best known was Julian Schwinger. Mm.
And one of the interesting things was my parents both had security clearances, so they couldn't talk to each other about what they did exactly.
No, we couldn't talk to each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, no, you never talked about it at home. It was all supposed to be highly secret. Bob's even more than mine, but mine was too. And you had to have a badge to get in. They put a time clock in. You had to punch the time clock. And we girls didn't like to do it. We'd never done that sort of thing before. So I think we complained to the men we were working for, and they said, we'll fix that. So instead of having the same rank as secretaries, they made us, what did you call it, of the lab.
Would that be like an assistant?
Somewhere I have a picture of all the people, but I wasn't in it. I was home on maternity leave.
So you were your first child, you became pregnant at that time?
About when it looked like we were going to win the war, we decided, and we put aside a little money, we decided, yes, we could. So my first son was born. My son was born in 45, mm-hmm. May of 45. And then, of course, the war actually ended that August.
Were you at MIT during the whole war?
We got there. At the time we were married, and I got out to MIT soon thereafter, and then we were there, yes, until then, and all the jobs were collapsing, and my husband had always planned to get a PhD, and it was understood when we were married he was going to, and I'm not quite sure how he'd arranged it, but by phone he had arranged to get a graduate assistantship at Yale. And he wanted to go to Yale. He got an offer from Yale and from Brown, I think. But we'd been to Yale for a weekend to visit a friend, and we knew we liked it there. And so we went down there.
Could we go back to the radiation lab, the work that you did there? Did you work at additional...
At the time, I had the baby. I was on maternity leave. But when the war ended, the radiation lab was sort of closing down. A little of it was left, but there was no need for it there, you know. Mm-hmm.
Did any of the people that you work with that you knew, were they involved with the Manhattan Project? With the atomic bomb development?
No. Mm-hmm. That was in
Los Alamos. Mm-hmm.
And it also there was a little something in Chicago area. Mm-hmm. And they did, some of them went back and forth to the radiation lab, but they were really working on something quite different.
Mm-hmm. Were you involved in any other computers that developed during the war?
Well, to begin with, when I was still working there, I was doing some program, and they were having a big debate over whether it was worth 6 weeks of my time to get one more figure of accuracy or not. And then someone said, and I forget who was the man who put together the first computer at MIT. I hear that he has a machine up there that can calculate faster. And he is looking for programs to test it on. And I think he'd be happy to do that for you. And I think they call it the Mach 1 or something. Anyway, so I went up to see them because, of course, I had to tell them just what we needed done. And he was delighted to do it. I think I went up and helped punch some tape for them or something, or check what they were doing. And then he said, would you like to come up and see it run? So, and he said, your husband can come too if he has a badge. So we went up that evening, and the computer, it was in a big room down in the basement. Oh, it was a room that was at least 20 feet long and wide in proportion. And there were shelves around the wall, and all of the pieces were in boxes around the shelves around the hall. And punched tape for that first one, I think. And then the output came out on a tape, which you then eventually had to run through a typewriter to type it out. And I was just fascinated by it, but it was under the use of the Navy, and you had to belong to the Navy to use it, so I couldn't.
So you saw the first computer then?
It wasn't the first, well, it was maybe the second.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I think there was some question over what was really the first.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember the man's name who was in charge of it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to go on to Michigan State? Or?
Sure. After the war, and you mentioned that your husband was, you were thinking about going to Yale. Did he end up going there?
Yeah, we went to Yale, baby and all. Huh. I don't know how he thought he was going to support us, but somehow we did. And the head of the department there, for the physics department, put us in touch with a student, Fred Leitner, and right across the road from the physics department, there was a big old Victorian house, and it had been given some kind of zoning privilege to house a lot of people during the war years. And it was run as a cooperative house. So we got a room in the cooperative house. We had one fairly large bedroom for ourselves and the baby. And then you shared the rest of the house. You ate dinners together. You got your own breakfast and lunch, and you were honor bound to write down how much you ate so you know how much you had to pay for it. And then for dinner. And then everyone had to work part of the time to keep the house going. And you got some credit toward your bill for what you worked. You had to work at least 12 hours a week. Well, I did mine and some for Bob, and then you could work extra if they needed you. So I sort of learned to cook there.
Were many of the other students returning veterans, or?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The graduate students at Yale that were Bob's classmates were some of the veterans, the earlier ones that got back.
It was a real interesting group of scientists and all that were there together.
What was your husband's area of study that he did?
Physics.
Was there any specialty in it that you were aware of at the time?
Not really. Theoretical physics it was. He wasn't too into the experimental stuff. He liked the theoretical physics best.
Mm-hmm. And do you remember who he studied with at Yale? What, did he have a major professor that directed his dissertation? Or?
Yes, mm-hmm. And I'm not quite sure I remember his name. It'll come to me probably. Page,
okay.
And you took some courses with Page too, didn't you?
Oh, yes. Everyone there was taking... several physics people lived in the house, and they'd all taken Page's course in theoretical physics. And so Bob was always wanting me to get educated.